Have you ever watched a movie and wondered why they cast that woman or that guy? Well, here's our chance to give it a try. We're Repodcasting.
Okay, hello everybody, and welcome to another episode of Repodcasting. I'm Lucia, and this month I have two very special guests joining me. We have Karen and Elizabeth. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
Yay. So Karen and Elizabeth, I know your voices very well from listening to your old podcast. That's a thing. You kept me current on what the kids were saying these days. And so now I feel very out of the loop.
That was our fondest desire. So for about 4.5 years, we did a podcast called That's a Thing. And Elizabeth and sometimes her brother would just explain their media to me. And then you aged out at 20, right?
Yeah, I'm blessedly no longer with the kids. So I can't keep you up to date on what they're into. It's all Greek to me now.
Fantastic. Okay, so now you're in the same boat as us.
Yeah, I'm retired.
Well, luckily for anybody listening, you can go hear the back catalog, I believe, on your podcast player. It was a really fun show that I enjoyed a lot. And so for today, for our movie, you picked a very recent one, The Iron Claw, that came out in December 2023. Do you want to let me know why you chose it?
Yeah, so this is a perhaps faux pas for this podcast. I don't keep up with the stars of Hollywood. I do keep up with the stars of pro wrestling, though. And I think that this movie has a really interesting attitude towards pro wrestling. And I might sneak some pro wrestling lore into the episode to compensate for my lack of Hollywood know-how.
Great.
And it's actually like a really long-standing theory of ours that if you understand wrestling, you understand a lot about the world and politics and marketing and interpersonal relationships and storytelling and everything. And so when you sent us the list of potential movies, that one leapt out.
Great. Wow. Well, I used to watch WWF when I was very small in the 80s, and I probably dropped off, I don't know, when I was like mid-teens. It just kind of lost its appeal for me, and that was it. I never looked at it again. I don't keep up with it. When I went to see this movie, it was actually at a special screening from the Calgary Underground Film Festival, and Bret the Hitman Hart was there and introduced the movie.
Very cool.
Yeah. What I thought was really interesting, because I knew nothing about the movie going in. I was just like, okay, I'll go watch this. I knew nothing about the Von Erich family before watching it. And Bret Hart's introduction talked about how, like, he was really impressed with the movie and thinks there should be more movies like this about the wrestling world. And then at the end of the movie, I was like, wait, was this movie pro wrestling? Or anti, because I'm not sure.
Well, maybe what he was trying to get at there is that there's a lot of human tragedy that is connected to this very strange line of business that he spent his whole life in, and that his dad spent his whole life in, and that his brothers, at least one of whom gave his life to himself, right? So. Yeah. Maybe that's what he was saying. It's not like we need to celebrate wrestling, but we need to understand, like, it takes a toll.
Right. Yeah, that could be it for sure. And that was one thing that really stood out to me about the movie, is that even though I don't keep up with wrestling and it's not a part of my life anymore, the movie is a human story. It's not a wrestling story. It just does happen to be about a family that's involved in wrestling.
Yeah, I think that's right. And to varying degrees of success, I'll say.
So question for both of you. So then, you know, given your own history with wrestling, did you know the Von Erich family before watching this?
I did actually not know about the Von Erich family, but I grew up watching Stampede Wrestling, actually.
Oh, okay.
And which was founded by, or had a lot to do with, Bret Hart's dad, Stu Hart. Mm-hmm. And it's actually Stu Hart who gave the Von Erichs their name. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, it was the guy who became Fritz Von Erich trained with Stu Hart, and he needed a gimmick. And so Stu gave him and this other guy this gimmick of being Nazis. So they were bad guys.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually, it's kind of our fault because the man who would become Fritz von Erich was in Edmonton because he'd done the classic wrestler thing of failing to become an American football player, coming to become a Canadian football player, and then running into a member of the Hart family and becoming a pro wrestler.
Oh, wow.
A story that's repeated a couple of times.
The truth versus Edmonton.
I didn't say it. Okay, well, so this movie, its box office numbers, it had a budget of $15.9 million, which I think sounds low almost, just considering the level of talent that they have involved and stuff like that. But anyway, $15.9 million, and then its worldwide box office was $43.26 million. So it did well. It wasn't like a mega hit, but it definitely recouped its money.
And certainly in a time when people are not used to going to theaters still a little bit, like it's part of like the recovery, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I wonder if this did well via word of mouth, because I do have to say, I just kept hearing good things, even like I saw it relatively early, but all of like the critical response and just kind of like people who had gone to see it posting about it on social media, it was all super, super positive.
Yeah, I think it and I mean, I have some quibbles and concerns, I guess, with it, but I think that some of that might have been it's pretty good for a wrestling movie, maybe. I don't know. Is that fair?
I think it played to a lot of audiences. And so a lot of people were able to come out pleasantly surprised and satisfied by it, which is maybe not what I believe movies should aspire to. But I can't argue with the critical success that it's had because of that choice it made.
Right. Okay. Do you have a synopsis that you want to tell?
I do have a synopsis.
Great.
So get ready for a lot of me for a minute. Released at the tail end of 2023, A24's The Iron Claw is a PSA on the greatest danger a young man can face, becoming a successful pro wrestler. I'm kidding, kind of. The Iron Claw is about fathers and sons and brothers, about toxic masculinity, about family. And only after all of that is it about how pro wrestling is totally fake and utterly real and will take everything you love from you. The film follows and fictionalizes the allegedly cursed lives of the real Von Erich wrestling family, following patriarch Fritz and his four ill-fated sons. He had more, but for the sake of the movie, 4.5. There was artistic youngest brother Mike, played by Stanley Simmons, who dies by suicide after suffering brain damage during a match he was undertrained for. Harris Dickinson plays David Von Erich, Fritz's third son, who dies of an untreated internal injury in Japan before facing final boss of the 80s, Ric Flair. Jeremy Allen White plays Kerry Von Erich, Fritz's fourth son, who lost his leg in a motorcycle accident at the high point of his career, and then somehow continued to pro wrestle to everybody's detriment. And then, of course, Zac Efron stars as Kevin Von Erich, through whose eyes the story is told. Kevin survives mostly because he's a relatively normal guy for a pro wrestler and never commits to the bit enough to succeed or be killed by the fake sport. And that's the Iron Claw.
That's a fantastic summary of it. I love it. I also like that you did point out that the story is told through Kevin's eyes. I mean, he's the surviving family member. But there were a lot of times where, I don't know, the father very much seemed like a villain, and I was okay to see him that way. But I did speak with some people after the film who are super into wrestling, who said that maybe that was like very much Kevin's point of view for certain ways in which the father behaved or treated his sons. But yeah, I don't know. It's absolutely impossible to know exactly what all the true details are now, because there's literally one surviving family member. And the other thing that was so shocking to me is that, yes, there were six sons, and it was just that the story was just too sad. There just wasn't time to like include all of the sons that passed on. How tragic.
Yeah. And also, one of the complicated things about doing a biopic is what happens when you can't fit your story into your movie, right? Like, there is kind of an ethical question there of you're cutting a whole guy out of this.
Yes.
You're folding his personality into Jeremy Allen White. And it's like, are either of those brothers portrayed then, if that's what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, it's possible that Fritz was a better person than this movie portrays. There's also an argument that he's the worst one. There's actually an episode of Behind the Bastards that is ostensibly about Vince McMahon, but is actually about Fritz von Erich because of what he encouraged his sons to go through. And he's worse in that than he seems to be in this movie. So it might also be a softer version. And that's the thing with pro wrestling also, is every story about it is both wilder than the one that gets circulated and also completely different than the one that gets circulated.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I guess because they are constantly presenting this thing as real, but doing it in like this very exaggerated way that you're just, what is real?
Yeah, and the concept of kayfabe, like the real, what is real, actually warps everything, and people come in and out of that, and so you can't really tell what's true anymore at all.
Wow. Whew, okay, with that, shall we get into some recasting?
Yeah, and just before we do that, so you suggested let's recast Zac Efron, who plays Kevin von Erich. And then we asked also to recast Ric Flair, which we'll get into. But I just want to say that part of what's really challenging about casting this movie or acting that role of Kevin is that the whole thing about that character is that he lacks the charisma to become a big star. Yeah. And so your central character, his main trait is a lack of charisma. What are you supposed to do about that?
Mm-hmm. And I would argue that they picked someone who is or was or is very charismatic. So that's maybe part of why I didn't think he was the best fit. I'll get into it deeper as to like why I really wanted to recast him
later, but
the Ric Flair thing, I mean, I remember Ric Flair sort of from the 80s, like I didn't watch it that much then, but I just like when you suggested that, I googled Ric Flair the Iron Claw, and the first thing that came up was Aaron Dean Eisenberg defends his portrayal. So I was like, oh,
I think a lot of people might have had some problems with this.
So, so if you guys want to start, we can start with Kevin and then move on to Ric Flair after.
Okay. Me first?
Yeah.
Okay. So, like Elizabeth, I don't really watch movies or know anything about the actors of today. But I thought for this role to be pulled off, it needs somebody who has kind of an inner life that you can see even though he's not speaking it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it also needs somebody that has the ability to wrestle well, which I think Zac Efron did, and he's definitely built in this movie, like holy cow, almost beyond what a 70s wrestler would actually look like. But
I agree.
So it has to be somebody who can be in amazing shape, but just have some kind of where you can see emotions even if he doesn't express them with words. And so
for sure.
I wondered whether Robert Pattinson would do a good job of that.
Ah.
Because he's known for kind of elevating some of the material that he has with like with Twilight. And is willing to, you know, be physical, like he bulked up for the Batman. And so I don't know. I thought maybe he could be a good Kevin.
I like that, actually, because yes, he is someone who you've seen, and Twilight is a good example where like he's very, I don't know, quiet, stoic, but you do see things happening behind his eyes and he doesn't have to say them. I like that a lot. How about you, Elizabeth?
Yeah, so this is an imaginary world where everybody in this movie is played by a pro wrestler, because otherwise it doesn't work.
Oh.
But in the early 2000s, there was this up-and-coming wrestler in WWE named Dolph Ziggler, and he was so close to being the guy, the number one guy, and he just never made it. But there's something really compelling about him. So if I was casting it all wrestlers, which you shouldn't do because they aren't good at normal acting because they aren't real human beings, I would put Dolph Ziggler there because he had the same problem of everything, the in-ring skill, all of it, except everybody around him was just that little bit better than him.
Oh.
And I think that would really read because of how exaggerated pro wrestlers are as people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he lived it, because that's very much what happens to Kevin. Like, he's constantly getting passed over for his brothers because they just have that personality that fit the wrestling world better. That's interesting. I don't know who Dolph Ziggler is. I'll have to look him up after we finish.
I'm putting us on an even playing field here.
Yeah, okay, great. So for me, I also like...
I almost feel guilty wanting to recast Zac Efron because there are so many people who are like, oh my gosh, it's his best performance of his career.
But a lot of that time I was thinking, man, if there was someone just like a little more adept,
you would see the
stoicism. You would see that he is a quiet person, a reserved person. He doesn't cry until the very end of the movie. After like so much tragedy, he does not cry. But you would understand, like, there were choices that Zac Efron was making, or that I should say the character makes choices where I'm like, what, why? And until he verbally expresses it, I'm like, oh, I feel like someone else could have, with their face, could have let me know why they were doing certain things that they were doing. So that was really the reason behind me wanting to recast Zac Efron. So I wanted someone who is very, very good. I'm just going to keep using the word stoic, who can be really stoic, but who has a lot of layers and range. And I landed on Jesse Plemons, who he was in Breaking Bad. Also, he stole the show in Game Night. He starred in Power of the Dog. And he's actually in The Irishman, too, which I had forgotten. He also starred in a movie called Other People. And so these credits that I just listed are all really different. Like, some are comedies, some are dramas. He can do a lot. He's really talented. And while I do think that, like, yes, he's getting starring roles, he feels like somebody who's just, like, a little too under the radar for how good he is, in my opinion. And in terms of the physicality, like, I mean, we saw a giant transformation in Zac Efron. So I didn't stop to think about the physicality because I'm like, whoever it is can bulk up.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just wanted to focus on the actors.
Get a trainer.
Yeah, absolutely.
It definitely feels like Efron was selected for his physique first. And then they were like, oh, how do we write this role so that Zac Efron can carry through with it a little bit?
That's so mean.
Well, it's just, the character is written in this way where he's carried through life by everybody else. He doesn't make a lot of decisions. He doesn't feel like he has a lot of agency. And I think that works to an extent, but at some point you have to do something not because your wife told you to and not because your dad told you to. Yeah. And that doesn't really happen until arguably the very end. And I think, is that because that's the kind of guy he is? Or because that's the kind of performance that Zac Efron can carry. There's an alternate version, I think, of the character of Kevin, where his flaw isn't that he isn't charismatic enough, it's that he doesn't believe in pro wrestling the way that everybody else around him does, where he's like, no, it's fake. If I'm lying down on the concrete because I'm injured, I'm going to stay down and get medical care because I'm a real person and this is fake. And they shouldn't have done that to me. And everybody around him is like, what are you talking about, Kevin? Right? There's an interesting movie that maybe wouldn't have been as universally loved, where it's one guy who's grounded and real and trying to have a career and a family, and everybody around him believes pro wrestling is real.
Yeah. Wow.
I would have liked that would be better, but
that would be interesting. This past weekend I watched the Dark Side of the Ring episode about the Von Erich family, and watching Kevin in that, first of all, I mean, I don't know what he looked like back in the 80s, but he wasn't very big now. Zac Efron looks so exaggeratedly huge. And also because we all know Zac Efron and know what he looks like. And he comes on screen and I'm like, why does he look like David Hasselhoff? Like, his face completely changed. And that felt like that kind of like Oscar grabby thing that actors do, where it's like, I will transform what I look like regardless of the acting and therefore you will give me awards. And it didn't work out for him, but.
Yeah. Also, his hair looks like Lou Ferrigno in The Incredible Hulk, and that's not even what Kevin Von Erich looked like.
Oh, so. No. Wow. Yeah. Interesting.
I wonder how much Kevin Von Erich was involved in the making of the movie, because it's definitely like based off of his telling of the story. But I wonder if he was there being like, yeah, cool, this looks good, that looks good. Like, I don't know. That would be interesting to find out. But okay, let's move on to Ric Flair, who is played by Aaron Dean Eisenberg.
Why did you want to recast this?
Oh, because it was not very good and everybody agreed about that. He's miscast from the beginning. He doesn't especially look like Ric Flair. And it's just so obvious that this is the role you put your biggest, best guy in. This is where you blow your budget a little bit. Because, like, there's a reason I described him as the final boss of the 80s. He's the final boss of the Von Erichs. He, like, kind of ends Kevin's career because Kevin's never going to be charismatic enough to match him. And he basically also ends, like, David's career, and like Carrie comes up against him. Carrie has his life ruined, right? So Ric Flair has to mean something in this movie. He's almost a symbol, and they just have a normal guy doing a bad Ric Flair impression. No, this is where you bring out your weird middle-aged Hollywood guy who can look like a man who's been old for 60 years.
Oh my and gosh,
that's the greatest guy on the mic of all time. You need somebody who can monologue.
Oh, interesting.
Mom had a pull for this one.
So I wondered, what if Matthew McConaughey did that role?
Wow.
Okay.
I'm a bit older now than Ric Flair would have been then, but Ric Flair is, like Elizabeth says, like, he's timeless. He's been like he is now the whole time.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a problem, but you just like have Matthew McConaughey turn on the full Matthew, right?
Yeah.
And just be completely obnoxious Texan wooing around. I think that would have given us a sense of like, how can these tragic boys, especially the last one standing, just not beat this guy? Because it's not just about how good you are at wrestling. It's about how you can just be this absolutely cartoon character.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Ric Flair represents the other company, right? Like, there's this other arc going on where Fritz is trying to have the biggest wrestling company, and it's not going to happen. And the era that he's from is dying because Vince McMahon is slowly killing it in the background. He doesn't even show up, but that's what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so Ric Flair is a Vince guy, and he's this totally different kind of wrestler that is going to become the only kind of wrestler. And so you need to feel really palpably the difference between these guys who are played by these up-and-coming actors and this established, inevitable star. And so you need a big cameo like McConaughey to carry that more and make it more resonant.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean McConaughey is your choice as well, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a crack choice, but we're going to save it for later.
Okay.
Well, this is absolutely wild because when I picked mine, I was like, oh, I think it's a bit weird. I don't know if.
There you go. Incredible.
Yeah, it has to be him.
It should have happened.
Yeah, it's crazy. I love that.
Because, yeah, he was a little too old for the role. But like you said, Ric Flair has always looked old. So I think it would work. Oh, that's too funny.
That's a first where like three people pick the same one. I love it.
Just wild enough, I guess.
Dude, trust me. Matthew McConaughey, Ric Flair.
Yeah, I know. Now I like genuinely want to see that.
Yeah, well, Bret Hart said we need more wrestling movies, so someone make the Ric Flair.
No, do not do Ric Flair is made of tan leather and scandals, and he can't die, and do not make anything about him until he does.
Oh, no.
Okay. So we kind of alluded to some of the other brothers. I did just want to mention the first son that they had, Jack Jr., he was electrically shocked and drowned in a puddle at age 6, which is just horrific. And I can't remember, is that mentioned in the movie or he's also just completely left out?
No. How he dies is not, they don't get into the details, but they do say that he's the first brother who died. And that is comes up when Pam first approaches Kevin and you're the oldest. She says, he says he's not the oldest. His little brother died. And that's kind of how you introduce the idea of the curse. Right.
Okay.
And it's one of the rare good characterization points. It's really strong for Kevin because it explains he has the burden of the eldest, but not the prestige.
Yeah.
Right? He feels responsible for his family, but he isn't the first, and he doesn't have that honor in the eyes of his father automatically of being the first son because for 6 years he wasn't.
Yeah. And also, speaking of the honor of the first son, one thing that blew my mind, and I hope it's not real, I hope it's just exaggerated for the movie, is how the father would be like, today, Mike's my favorite. He would just literally at the dinner table tell them all what order they fell in by his preference. Who does that?
Fathers who end up having a lot of their children predecease them.
Holy cow. Okay, because this movie's quite new, I feel like there wasn't a lot of trivia tidbits and things like that. But I did want to mention what the director, Sean Durkin, said about leaving out Chris Von Erich out of the story. So he said, it's hard on a human level to look at these people as characters on a page because they were real people. But at some point as a writer and a filmmaker, you have to say, if I step away and look at them as characters on a page and look at it as a film, there's just a repetition to the deaths of Carrie, Mike, and Chris that they all died in the same way. And the film couldn't sustain all the tragedy. Whew, that's rough.
That's rough. And if you're going to say that out loud, which I don't know if I would when some of the people are still alive that you're talking about, then why not change lots of things? He kept some things because that's what really happened, but then he changed this big thing.
Yeah, and I mean, he said that in an interview with IndieWire, so this was on the record.
This wasn't someone overheard him saying that.
And yeah, it's really cold.
I would say that the best casting in that movie is Maura Tierney as the mother, because you can see as the movie goes on each addition of pain to her face. And imagine this woman who has lost 5 of her 6 children. Mm-hmm. It's just unbelievable amounts of pain and suffering for her to absorb and only survive through her faith in the Catholic Church. And then when that wasn't enough, then she finally kicks Fritz to the curb, but not before her life is just absolutely just one tragedy after the next.
Yeah. Yeah, she was fantastic. I really love Maura Tierney. And that's the thing. You have Maura Tierney, you have Jeremy Allen White, you have Harris Dickinson. These people are all put, and even Holt McCallany, who plays Fritz, all of these people are turning in really impressive performances. And to me, that just made Zac Efron stand out a little more as he's just not keeping up. So
he problematically for the movie feels like one of the less real people in it.
Yeah,
because
that's true.
All of those people are turning in those really dimensional performances. You look at Jeremy Allen White's astonishing, not seen since Gene Wilder eyes, and you're like, I can see everything that's happening to that man right now just on his face, even though he doesn't seem to be flexing any of those muscles. And then you see Zac Efron's face and you're like, dude, what happened?
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I read that Jeremy Allen White was related to Gene Wilder and I got so excited. And then when I dug into it, I was like, oh no, this is just what people are saying because they look alike. Okay. So the curse, actually, if you believe in curses, it extends beyond the Von Erich family, according to some people, to some people who Fritz trained back in the day. So we have Gino Hernandez and Bruiser Brody. Both of them were possibly murdered in the 80s. And the first one, it ended up being ruled a suicide later, which maybe it was, or maybe they couldn't find anything and just, covered it up. And then the second person Bruiser Brody died from being stabbed in a locker room, and none of the witnesses would speak in trial. And so nothing happened there either. So like that wrestling world, man, oh man, it's dark.
Well, and that's the thing is the curse is wrestling. It's like there is not a curse. It is the toxic masculinity that's at the heart of wrestling is the problem.
100%.
Yeah, and it continues to bring forth tragedies from Vince McMahon finally getting removed from the wrestling world after decades of scandal and allegation to Bray Wyatt passing away tragically young, to all of the wrestlers who have passed away tragically young. It's just a bad thing to do to your body, and with the culture that is often there, a bad thing to do to your mind. To put yourself into that space for extended periods of time. And there are people who have made it work, but it has like a catastrophically high casualty rate. And also one that ruins the lives of the people around them, which you see in this movie, like especially with Carrie's character arc, where he becomes this horrible person to be around, like destructive and reactive because he's constantly in pain. And he's unable to manage it because his livelihood depends on him re-aggravating his injuries every day. And it's like constantly opening your own wounds sometimes, how that goes. And it breaks people, but they're still standing. And that's sometimes worse.
Yeah. And you're just kind of expected to like toughen up, suck it up, keep moving, even though it's really bad for you. Yeah, it's a rough one.
Do you feel complicity then still watching it?
I do this cool thing called not technically watching it legally, maybe. No. I feel like it's moving in a better direction. You see a lot more women's wrestling taken seriously now, and I think that's an indicator. Like before the mid-2000s almost, every woman's wrestling story was a tragedy. You had Chyna, you had Luna Valjean, like it was the same arc. And now it's starting to get taken seriously. And I think that aligns with a progressive shift in the quote unquote sport, where people are starting to look at it and go, okay, there's something really human here. There's something really powerful. Wrestling lays bare what a lot of human interaction is, what politics is, what Hollywood is, what everything is, right? What's going on in your office? Like you can see, you can use the language, you can see what's going on, but also it isn't moral to continue to make something that creates bodies and monsters, right? And so I think the current generation is actually one of the best that we've had. And it's bringing a healthier locker room and a better attitude towards injury. Huh. And I think it's possible. Like, I don't think wrestling is inherently bad, even though there's a lot of violence involved, a lot of injury involved. It's also theater, right? Mm-hmm. And it's possible to make incredible art with it and for people to survive it. And it just takes the culture shift first. And then everything else follows.
Listening to you talk about it also reminds me of like the NFL right now, because that's also another one where, you know, it's coming out. It's been happening for so long that it's very bad for you, but it feels like it's only in recent years that people are actually, you know, talking about it and bringing that out to light.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope that newer generations genuinely do push this in the right direction, both of them. Okay, so I'll mention the ratings for the movie. On IMDb, this has a 73% from 55 critics. And then on Rotten Tomatoes, it has an 89% from 260 reviewers. And that's not like the audience score. The audience score was even higher. It was in the 90s. So yeah, like I was saying, there's a lot of love for this movie. I mean, I don't want to say enjoyed watching it because like that sounds cruel, but I did think it was a good movie. It wasn't a compelling story.
Yeah, and there's lots of, yeah, it's also, it's like, at least it's not a superhero movie, like it's taking some choices or some making some decisions to be a little bit more artistic, and yeah, I'm glad it exists. I just saw some room for improvement.
Yeah, I'm along the same lines where I'm like, this is going to be exciting to a lot of people. people. And also, it kind of isn't for me and what I know about this and how I feel about this. And I can't get mad about that. I'm just going to go watch actual pro wrestling because that's clearly what I want, right?
So do you feel that it's not as good to you because you're like more entrenched in wrestling, like you know more about it, and that's why you can't enjoy this movie?
I think it's more like how I enjoy it is different from how this movie feels about it. Hmm. Like part of it is it's a man movie, right? And I am capable of empathizing with men, but also asking me to do that for 2 hours and the female characters are mom and wife. It's a little bit like, okay, can you do something more interesting? Because you're asking me to like sustain a lot of sympathy for guys who are causing their own problems. Okay. And so I almost, like, I think it's important to have movies about toxic masculinity, and also important that I don't watch too many of them because I get a little bit cynical about it because I'm like, okay, we get it. It's your fault. Go to therapy. Chill out, right?
Right.
Whereas if you maybe had a tough relationship with your father, then this movie would resonate a little bit more. Like you lost a brother or something. And those aren't feelings I can connect to beyond the theoretical.
Okay.
Which is fine because movies are not made for me. I can enjoy pro wrestling that's about like men peacocking at each other because that's so exaggerated that it's more artistically interesting than emotionally.
Okay.
And you like drag.
Yeah. Wrestling is drag.
Oh, for sure.
Is wrestling, and then wrestling is drag.
Yeah. And there actually is also drag wrestling. okay. That's great. I think that really sums it up well. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention about the movie or anything before we move on to the final segment?
I would like to point out the wrestlers who are in it because there are a couple.
Oh, great.
So Chavo Guerrero Jr. does the wrestling training for the movie. And then he also comes in as the Sheik, which is fun.
Okay.
They did a lot of the classic wrestlers that aren't Ric Flair really well as little cameos.
Okay.
And then Maxwell Jacob Friedman, MJF, was a producer on the movie. And he also got a small role in it. So the guy who looks absolutely goofy in all of the family pictures off to the side is him. He's also the tag partner who won't tag Kevin in the like Kevin is having a bad time montage. He's really having it up there, and he had a really good time, it seems like, so I'm happy for him.
Great. Okay, that's funny. Okay, great. Well, let's move on to our final segment.
Hold me close, young Tony Danza.
It's time for Hold Me Close, Young Tony Danza, the segment where we cast Tony Danza into one of the roles in this movie. And I'm so excited for this segment today. It feels like a really good fit.
Do you want to go first then, or do you want us to?
No, please. Karen,
you can go first.
Well, mine is not the greatest role, but I do think he could bring something to it. It's the ref in the scene where Kevin is going too hard on Ric Flair and he has to like sort of remind him that wrestling is fake and that he shouldn't be killing this guy. I thought that Tony could do a good job of kind of trying to bring him back to reality.
Great.
Okay, so here's my crack pick, right? I kept looking at young Tony Danza's face and being like, could you look like Ric Flair? Could you look like young Ric Flair? I think you could look like young Ric Flair. It's in the nose. It's in the exaggerated facial features. Put some sunglasses on this man. I think it might work. That's my wildest pull of the day.
Love it.
Well, and actually, Tony Danza has long white hair now.
Yeah.
Like, so
I was looking at old Tony Danza after, and I was like, also maybe Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Love that. Okay, so yeah, mostly because of his age in 2023, I feel like it's quite limited what he could do. If we could pick from any era, I'd love to throw a young Tony Danza into the ring as one of the Von Erich brothers. But as it stands, I cast him as Fritz Von Erich, and I want to see him really flex those acting muscles and be the villain and, yeah, have a good time with being a bad dad. We're so used to seeing him as a good dad.
Has he ever played a bad guy?
Yeah, what's it called? The Netflix series that he did with Josh Groban, where he's a police officer. He's a corrupt cop.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never seen him be anything but affable, so it
I
just felt
know.
like a big stretch.
It is. It is a big stretch, no doubt. But I want to see him do it. I think he could stretch those muscles.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us, or for joining me. We do not have a movie picked for next month, but you can follow Repodcasting on social media at Repodcasting, and you can send an email to repodcasting@gmail.com if you have any suggestions for movies we should recast. As for you, Karen and Elizabeth, do you want to plug anything?
Sure. I'll plug my company, Taproot Publishing. We are a local media company in Edmonton. We pay attention to what's going on in our city and distill it and give it back to you in the form of stories, newsletters, and podcasts.
Great.
Since you're listening to local podcast right now, or an Alberta-made podcast right now, if you would like to know more about Edmonton City Hall, listen to Speaking Municipally, which is Taproot's podcast about civic affairs. And then we also have within the Taproot family, Let's Find Out, which is a podcast about history in Edmonton.
Fantastic.
And I'm retired. And I'm not going to plug my employer. She has to pay for that.
So you don't see podcasting in your future?
I could see myself coming back, but I'd have to be able to feel like I could do it consistently. Right now, my creative energy is in hobby acting. So you might see my name around. I'm not in anything right now. I'm not interested in getting paid for it. I'm retired.
That's very cool. Oh my gosh. I love that you're an actor in your spare time. Well, yeah, thank you again for joining me. That was a lot of fun. You picked a great movie to recast, and hopefully we can do it again soon. And Karen, we can pick an older movie for next time. I know you mentioned, like, you know the older actors from a different era.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Hi again. Lucia here, just to let you know that next month's movie is The Running Man from 1987, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, and my special guest co-host is Adam Carestes, who was also on our Mars Attacks episode a while back. So watch The Running Man and recast along with us, and we'll see you next month.